Given the traffic going on, let's take a short recess so that people can find their way out and their way in.
Sorry, I'm a little short, Miss Field, so I'm lowering.
Thank you.
Morning, Council. May proceed.
May it please the court, Teresa Murray on behalf of appellant Kevin West. Mr. West submits that attorney's fees awarded to employees who suffer workplace discrimination should be adjusted to compensate for a delay in payment. The Postal Service concedes this point. In Missouri versus Jenkins,
is there a final judgment to be appealing from here?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
What is the decision of finality that we have for review?
The revised supplemental judgment was entered by the court in February of 2012, and that is at attachment 2 to the plaintiff's reply brief.
By judge who?
Is that by Judge Rothstein. That was the final judgment.
But you don't understand on that in the JA reference.
I'm sorry,
what's the JA reference?
The gray brief.
It's an attachment to the reply brief. It was not included in the joint appendix because we weren't anticipating a jurisdictional argument, but we relied on record
Council,
from the evidence.
That's not something you just anticipate. You look at jurisdiction when you bring an appeal.
That's very true, Your Honor. The supplemental judgment was just the final decision. That wasn't, in fact, the final judgment, rather, that wasn't the ruling that's under the court's review. It was just the final judgment. The
so ruling, you're not appealing that judgment,
the
right?
Final judgment pertained to, I believe, back pay award. That the right. Judgment, the revised supplemental judgment is not before the court. What's before the court?
What is it that's the decision that's before the court? That is a judgment of finality that we have jurisdiction to review.
It's a composite of decisions. First, it is...
may be the problem.
Well, it's not a problem for jurisdiction. It was certainly a problem for the parties at the lower court. First of all, Mr. West filed a motion for attorney's fees award following a jury verdict in his favor.
Can we just get cut to the core here? Here's the problem, as I see it. And I don't know whether it's a problem or not, but Judge Kennedy entered in January 2010, he awarded interim fees based on historic rates, right?
He based it on the report and recommendation that he adopted as the court's ruling on fees, yes.
Right, but that was based on your motion that you needed an interim award, right?
The interim award, yes.
Yes, and your motion said, you know, we haven't resolved this question of historic versus current, but give us fees at the historic rate. And Judge Kennedy did that, and he said in that order, that there's a substantial difference between these amounts. And then he says, court notes as well that there will be opportunity to adjudicate the difference, right, between historic and current rates.
No, Your Honor,
that was his 2010 order. And then the next thing that happens 2 years later is you settle for the historic rates. So we have no one took Judge Kennedy up on his offer to resolve that issue, and you have no court order on that question for us to review. What am I missing?
There's several... Yeah. Factual inaccuracies with all respect respect to that. First, the plaintiff's motion for interim award preceded the court's adoption of the report and recommendation. That motion was submitted due to exigent circumstances and the ongoing financial hardship that plaintiff's counsel and plaintiff has suffered. Between the time the motion was filed and the court rendered its decision, the court adopted the report and recommendation. The interim motion did not request historic rates. It's at Joint Appendix 323.
You're not really getting to the question that is vexing us.
Okay. My understanding of what Judge Tatel is highlighting is whether or not we had requested historic rates or we somehow accepted historic rates and that we have therefore relinquished any right for historic rate.
No, I didn't say that. I said that What you didn't do was, since you accepted an interim fee based on historic rates, and based on that, Judge Kennedy said, okay, I'll grant you that, and we'll resolve this debate later.
What,
I mean, that's what he said in his...
What Judge Kennedy was referring to was the computational differences between the parties' numbers, not the issue of whether historic versus current rates. That was a separate ruling than the interim order. That is at Joint Appendix 412.
Because it would seem to follow, if we have a final judgment, that if this court should agree that historic rates apply, that is the end of the matter, and plaintiff gets the $24,000 in the judgment of Judge Rothstein and no more. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. That is correct.
If there were affirmance of the historic rates proposition, there's no dispute whatever over calculating the amount.
That's correct, Your Honor. And at section, first of all, at Joint Appendix 412, the court adopted the report and recommendation. As you will see by the date, it's dated December 28, 2009. That occurred after our interim motion for attorney's fees. So it wasn't an adoption of historic rates at plaintiff's request or Mr. West's request. It was consistent with the court's decision to adopt the report and recommendation, which awarded historic rates, that it then partially granted the motion for interim award and awarded historic rates. There was a computational difference between plaintiff's calculation and the government's calculation, which was later addressed by a supplemental consent order. To be clear, Judge Kennedy's invitation was not to come back and revisit the issue. It was to revisit the computational difference between the two parties' positions.
And you're telling us that computational difference is now totally resolved, at least so far as we have the premise of historic rates.
Yes, Your Honor. It is totally resolved.
What piece of paper is the final order that you tell us is appealable to give us jurisdiction over this appeal?
There are more than one pieces of paper.
No, there aren't. If there is a final order that is appealable,
yes,
there's very clear law that it's not more than one piece of paper. I mean, that's almost the language used. There has to be a final order to be appealable.
The order that we are appealing is the court's adoption of the report and recommendation, which awarded historic rates and provided no compensation for delay. That's the order.
You're telling us that when Judge Kennedy said, when he said the court appreciates that there is a substantial difference between the amount of the interim fees plaintiffs seek and the amount defendant seeks is appropriate, you're saying that that does not relate to the debate between historic and current?
Yes, yes, Your Honor.
Well, how do we know
precisely
that?
What I'm saying?
How do we know that? I mean, what?
Well, the footnote that you're referring to says, the court appreciates that there is a substantial difference between the amount of the interim fees that plaintiff argues he has incurred and the defendant indicates is appropriate. He says it's better to require a payment now, and
isn't
the court...
The amount, isn't there, the debate between historic and current is a question about amount also.
But the question about historic versus current rate had been settled. The court issued a ruling adopting the report and recommendation awarding historic rates. It was no longer an open question. At this point, the interim award came after the court's adoption of the rate of historic rates, and the parties had a different computation in how to calculate that. The specific error was that they didn't take into account the 11 to 19 years experience for, I believe, 2008 or 2007. That was the error in the computation. But the issue itself of current versus historic rates had already been decided by the court.
So if we're looking for one order that you're appealing, it's Judge Kennedy's October 2009 order approving right?
Yes, yes, that's
no, right. I'm sorry. It's Judge Kennedy's approval of that, right?
Yes, it is.
In December, right?
December
of 2009. That's the order you're appealing.
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
So it's not Judge Rothstein's order that you're appealing.
I'm sorry.
So it's not Judge Rothstein's order that you're appealing.
No, Judge Rothstein's order is the final judgment. When we received, we couldn't come in and present an interlocutory appeal. We couldn't come in after the interim award and say, hey, there's an error here. We had to wait until there was a final judgment, and that's what we did. And the ultimate issue of whether or not compensation for delay should have been awarded, again, is conceded by the Postal Service. In Missouri v. Jenkins, the Supreme Court engaged in what it called a straightforward statutory interpretation of Section 1988 and determined that a reasonable attorney's fee should include an adjustment for delay. The Supreme Court interpreted Section 1988 to provide a remedy for the harm that is caused by the delay in payment. The harm is twofold: the erosion of the fee's value over time due to inflation. The second is the loss of use of the funds in the interim between the time services are rendered and payment is ultimately made by the liable employer. The court's decision in Copeland similarly found that an award of present hourly rates rectifies harm resulting from delay in payment, and it identified the harm not just as inflation, but as the loss of use of the monies in the interim. Now, the district court below, however, awarded Mr. West no compensation for delay, but rather fees which were significantly below their value when the services were actually rendered. Mr. West first received payment of attorney's fees 7 years after legal services at issue in this appeal were rendered. Yet the district court failed to compensate him for his substantial delay in any manner. No application of interest, no current rates, no adjustment of any kind. Mr. West asked this court to reverse the district court's decision, which fails to follow Missouri's
statute. Did the district court set a final amount of attorney fees that was being awarded?
Yes, and that's the interim award.
That's the interim award?
Yes.
It was filed interim, which would seem
to be disputed.
Yeah. It was stated as interim. It seems contradictory to say that it is a final order. When I say what's final, you tell me the interim is final. That doesn't sound consistent.
You're asking about what the final computation of the prejudgment fees were?
The final entry of an order for attorney fees in this case is what you need to appeal from.
Yes.
Is there such a final order?
Yes. It is the court's adoption of the report and recommendation, which ruled the historic rate should apply, and it's the granting of the interim.
What was the amount the court granted? Then?
Yes, Your Honor.
And where do I find this? Yeah, we're in the joint appendix.
Yes, Your Honor. I will gladly point you to the record.
Please.
The award is at Joint Appendix 408, and it was modified later by the document at Joint Appendix 410. Those are the amounts, Your Honor.
Which one is that? What's the date?
408 and 410. And together, that totaled $222,835.13.
These are Judge Rothstein's?
These are Judge Kennedy's rulings.
Oh. But if he enters an interim award, doesn't that, and by its own terms, that order says there's disputes to be resolved, right?
It says that conflict in the computation of the award
will be resolved
later.
So that's not a final order. Your interim order can't, by definition, be a final order.
Right.
That's the order
that finally determined prejudgment attorney's fees.
But it's not a final order in the case. That's
what I referred to as the revised supplemental judgment. We can't come in with the interim award and complain that it is not a reasonable attorney's fees award. We have to wait until the case is finally concluded and it's a revised, a final judgment is entered. And that's what plaintiff did. We understand and appreciate the court's difficulty in piecing this together. This case was heard in front of four judges, not through our choosing. It was transferred from judge to judge to judge. And ultimately, we wish we had one single document where all of this was in it to present to this court, but we don't. The case was processed in the way that it was processed. But the clear ruling is that historic rates were awarded. That amount was computed and awarded to Mr. West, and that it fails to take into account any delay and any harm.
Is there an award that isn't a final computation that isn't called interim in the order that declares it?
There is not a final order that that awards attorney's fees in a dollar figure. The parties, however, entered into a stipulation of settlement with respect to post-judgment attorney's fees, which expressly reserved Mr. West's right to appeal pre-judgment attorney's fees. When the case was transferred to Judge Kennedy, which was the second judge on the case, he bifurcated the attorney's fees issue into two parts, pre-judgment and post-judgment. Pre-judgment is what's before this court. That's the report and recommendation that Judge Kennedy adopted which awarded historic rates. That rate was computed in an interim award. Post-judgment attorney's fees, the parties resolved among themselves. So the court did not issue a final attorney's fees award because the parties entered into a stipulation of settlement. The settlement, again, specifically reserved Mr. West's right to appeal. There was no agreement on that issue, so we decided that it's we could not resolve that, and
Can I just question you on,
yes,
on this passage in the order, page 408? Plaintiff seeks interim attorney's fees award of $301,000. And the court, because there's complete agreement on this, awards $255,000, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And this is all on the assumption of historic, using historic rates?
The 200...
Or is the difference between the 301 and the 255, does that depend on the historic versus current issue?
The difference between the 255 and the 301 has two components. One is that there was an error in the computation, and that accounted for $23,000 of that difference. You'll see that in the modified judgment, which follows at Joint Appendix 410. The remainder pertained to plaintiff's request for an interim award pursuant to the Postal Service's argument that interest should be applied rather than current rates. Again, this motion was filed before the court's adoption of the report and recommendation. So we did not have the benefit of the court's ruling adopting the report and recommendation, which awarded historic rates, until after we submitted our motion.
I guess what puzzles me is there's a gap of $45,000 there.
Yes.
And then another $24,000 is awarded in Judge Rothstein's judgment, right?
Not for attorney's fees.
Well, that's not for attorney's fees at all.
It mentions perhaps attorney's fees.
Anyway, I mean, what's mystifying is that you say the only thing in dispute, which was resolved by the district court, is the historic versus current. But why is there this gap of $45,000 in this here on page 408?
The original request of Mr. West and was made in five or six different filings. All of them requested current rates to compensate for delay. After the magistrate judge issued his report and recommendation recommending historic rates. The court had not ruled on it one way or the other. It remained purely a recommendation. After that, that's when plaintiff, Mr. West, filed a motion for an interim award of attorney's fees. After filing of that motion for an interim award, that's when the court adopted the report and recommendation awarding historic rates. So the motion for interim award was not the same amount that had been requested throughout the litigation nor in the original fee petition. It was reflective of the Postal Service's, I guess, opposition to plaintiff's objections to the report and recommendation, advocating for the use of interest. So what Mr. West did was said that, well, if interest is conceded by the, what is indeed conceded by the Postal Service, then we're requesting an interim award based on the application of interest. However, the court did not accept interest. The court adopted purely historic rates. So that's why there is a difference of $50,000, or part of that is the difference.
Well, doesn't the interest, the question of interest, relate to this issue of historic versus current? In other words, compensation for delay?
Interest can be used. That's within the court's discretion. But the court decided to employ no interest, no adjustment, no current rates, no compensation at all for delay. Interest certainly is specifically delineated.
That wasn't one of the elements of the dispute that Judge Kennedy thought he was putting off till later?
No. The court had adopted the report and recommendation awarding historic rates. And that is his separate opinion at Joint Appendix 412. That was not the difference between the parties that he was inviting the parties to come back and resolve. By the time the court granted, in part, the motion for interim award, the ruling awarding historic rates had been made. It was the ruling of the court. Therefore, the court recognized that there was a difference between the two parties' calculation of the historic rate and invited, which was a significant amount of money. It was $23,000. Court allowed, mentioned in a footnote that the parties may come back and adjudicate the difference. He was not inviting Mr. West to come back and adjudicate the issue of whether historic versus current rates should be used.
Just to going to Judge Rothstein's judgment, paragraph number 3 there.
Yes.
That, whatever that has to do with, it has nothing, the 24,000 and some odd, has nothing to do with attorney's fees.
That's correct. That is Mr. West's back pay plus prejudgment interest.
Unless there are further questions, we're 13 minutes past your time.
Okay.
So we will hear from the appellee.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Rhonda Fields for the United States Postal Service. Your Honors, initially, I would like to address the issue concerning Judge Kennedy's order and what was at question in the interim award. I would refer Your Honors to the Mr. West's request for interim fees. And in the interim fees at Joint Appendix 229, you will note that he was asking for $301,000 in interim fees. A portion of that was Ms. Murray's interim fee request, which was $223,000 rounded off. If you go to the next page, which is, it's hard to read, I think it's 237, there is a chart of her motion. And if you look at the chart.
Not 237 of the joint appendix. There's no chart there.
No. calculation on 248, I'm not sure I'd call it a chart. Okay, that's not what I'm looking at.
It follows 331 it would be, Your Honors.
331.
And this is Exhibit 1 to their request for fees, interim fees?
This is in the request for interim fees.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And in Ms. Murray's request, the portion that relates to Ms. Murray is $223,779. If you look at the column, that request is based on historic rates and a proposed T-bill interest rate with a 25% reduction, which is the reduction for prevailing. Therefore, what was at issue, even in the interim fee award, was historical rates plus a percentage increase. Unfortunately, when you look at the figures that she has here, there's something wrong with the calculation, because her calculation of the historic rates reduced plus the T-bill amount is $223,000-some. Her computation of the historic rate with just the reduction is $247,000. Adding the T-bill rate to the $247,000 should be an increase, not a decrease. So this was improperly calculated. Therefore, when the court said it was just going to resolve the dispute concerning the $301,000, that inherently has to do with whether or not an interest rate is applied to the historical rates. We would submit, Your Honors, that in looking at the record, there is no final order setting an amount of the fees or setting a manner in which to compute the fees.
So after when the Judge Rothstein entered the order that she entered, what would the plaintiff have done to get a final order to appeal from?
Your Honor, we believe, that looking at Judge Rothstein's order, that Judge Rothstein felt that the issue was moot. Because if you look at paragraph 2 of Judge Rothstein's order, she...
Does that answer my question?
We believe there was nothing they could have done after Judge Rothstein's order. Right. If that is considered the final order.
So that is a final order?
If that is considered the final order, then the final order, we believe, was a finding that the issue of...
I understand your position to be from page 19 at seek of your brief that there is not a final order to appeal from.
Correct, Your Honor.
Now, it is not the norm that cases can be rendered unappealable if they're controversies. What would plaintiff have had to do to get a final order after Judge Rothstein entered the order she did on October 12th?
In order to get a final order, she could have asked for reconsideration and asked to be allowed to ask for a final fee award to be awarded.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, I mean, I think I understand that, but I'm not yet persuaded that it was necessarily necessary, because if it is indeed the case that on the assumption of using historic rates, period, plaintiff has recovered everything plaintiff claims to be entitled to, why isn't the Rothstein order final, with only the issue of historic versus current to be resolved?
If it is final, Your Honor, and if the only issue to be resolved is historic versus current, if that's the only issue, that would be a very narrow issue on appeal.
Yeah,
right.
If that's a narrow issue on appeal, then we submit the answer is quite easy.
What?
Because this circuit and the Supreme Court have never said that current rates are the only rates that may properly be awarded for attorney's fees. In fact,
Wait, before you go into the merits, Can we just go back to one thing you said, and then you can go back to the merits,
yes,
okay? So what you just told us is that the plaintiff's counsel in her request for interim fees sought interest on the fee award, correct?
Correct, John.
Okay. Now, why her position is that with respect to the issue of historic versus current, that is, using current rates to compensate for delay, her point is that that issue was resolved when Judge Kennedy accepted the recommendation of the magistrate judge. And it was that way to compensate for delay was resolved, finished. And the question of whether another way to compensate for delay is to add interest to the historic rate, that's the issue that remained open, correct? Is that your position?
Our position is that the magistrate judge's recommendation was that the lodestar be set at the historic rate.
Okay.
Our position is that the government's position was always that there should be an increase for delay, and that we advocated that that increase should be some measure of interest, and that the current rate, her so-called current rate, was not a reasonable
rate. Okay, but her position now is that the district court finally resolved that when he accepted the magistrate's order, that is historic versus current, and that question is appealable. Do you disagree with that? Or do you now think it is appealable, but that it's a narrow question?
We believe that if the court has jurisdiction, it is on that very narrow issue. Yes, Your Honor.
And if the order of Judge Rothstein is, as you referred to it, final, why isn't this an appealable order? Why don't we have jurisdiction?
Then, if Your Honors believe that it is final, order, then it is.
If we agree with you, it is final. I mean, you're the one who said that a few minutes ago. So if we agree with you, then it is final, then it is appealable, then we have the narrow question, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And we submit that on that very narrow question, the law is quite clear, because plaintiff's position has been that the only rate that can be applied for delay in payment is her so-called current rate. Semantically, I'm not going to get into whether or not that is, in fact, the current rate that Laffey talked about, because we don't believe that it is. We believe that Laffey was talking about reading the Laffey chart from left to right. However, no matter what you call it, whatever rate that is requested has to be a reasonable rate. And we submit that Murray v. Weinberger says that.
What
because
does? I'm sorry, what does?
Murray v. Weinberger, uh-huh. Your Honor. Because when it characterized the market rate, it stated that the market rates in the relevant legal community may approximate the value today of the historic rates charged at the time when the legal services were rendered. Then it goes on to state that those current market rates under that definition have been used when it would not result in a windfall. Therefore, our argument, Your Honor, was always that Ms. Murray, in whatever rate she asked for, whatever she might entitle it, has to show that it's reasonable, that it in some manner approximates the present day value of the historic rate, whether or not she's talking about a Laffey historic rate or whether she might be talking about a historic rate that was the prevailing market rate of the attorney used. Under that measure, Your Honor, she never showed that $410 per hour, her so-called current rate, was in fact a reasonable approximation of the historic rates. We submitted to the district court interest measures based on the T-bill, based on the CPIU, and all the interest rates that we submitted in our example showed that the amount requested by Mrs. Murray was very much in excess of any interest measurement that could be applied. Therefore, the court did not.
Well, then your position is that it has to be based on interest. right?
It does not. No, no, Your Honor. Our position is not that it has to be based on interest.
Well, what else could it be? If it's based on anything that doesn't reflect interest, your argument is not reasonable. In other words, it could be based on current rates if they reflect interest rates, right?
If it's a reasonable approximation. For example,
well, that's my point. In other words, it has to be interest rates or a reasonable approximation of interest rates, correct?
Basically, yes, Your Honor, because when we look at Purdue again was talking about adjusting either the historical rate or the current market rate. And if we use the definition that this court has used for the historical rate and for the current rate based on Murray v. Weinberger, it's a reasonable approximation of an interest increase to the prevailing market rate that was in effect at the time the services were rendered. And if you look at Purdue basically says the same thing, because Purdue says increase for either historic rate or current market rate, meaning approximation of historic rate increase by interest, or you have to show some kind of exceptional reasons for increasing the amount of rates.
Red light's been on for about 2.5 minutes, unless my colleagues have further questions. We'll give 2 minutes back to the appellant for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
What's your best
earlier question, if I can? And that is, if we agree with the district court that historic rates are adequate, we would simply affirm, period. We would not remand.
Right.
Unfortunately, that would not be the result we advocate for, but certainly
that would be the
effect of
on
it.
The premise that I offer.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So now, what's your best argument that that's not correct? That it must be current rates as opposed to an interest adjustment?
Current rates serve the purposes, the remedial purposes for awarding attorney's fees, which
yeah,
is...
When you started, you said that the purpose of these is to compensate for delay.
Yes,
right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so
The historical rate adjusted for current value only accounts for inflation. If you have $200,000 yeah. over time, that value of $200,000 goes down due to increase in cost of living, okay. goods and services,
well,
etc.
Interest rate compensates for that.
That's right. That's what interest,
that's what
rate,
interest rate does.
Well, interest rate was not awarded, and second,
we're not disputing that.
Yeah.
Because you said that if we reject the historic, if we accept the historic rates principle, end of case.
Yes. Interest rates address inflation, but they do not address the loss of use of
interest
the funds.
Interest rates in general are for use of money. Now, they may or may not reflect inflation, but that
inflation has unfortunately outstripped.
That's really what interest is, use of money.
Well, see, the inflation unfortunately has outstripped interest.
Even if you're right about that, it doesn't necessarily mean it's current rates. Hmm. Right? I've been practicing law for a long time, but my rates went up when I was practicing law, sure, partially because of inflation, but also presumably because I was becoming more experienced and therefore people were presumably willing to pay more. Now, maybe they were wrong about that, but that was a theory, right? So
I'm sure they were right, Your Honor.
Well, okay. But current rates measure much more than just inflation and even loss of the use of the money.
They adequately compensate and make the victim of discrimination whole, because there is a threefold loss of money in the interim. There's the deprivation of the funds, there's lost opportunity costs, and there's loss of interest earnings that you could have earned on the money in the interim. Interest in no way addresses all of those factors. That's why
I was asking the opposite side. Isn't it possible that, current rates might measure what you want to measure here, but current rates could capture a lot more than inflation and loss of use of money?
It could potentially, and that burden would be on the Postal Service or the person opposing the use of it to show that it somehow factually constitutes a windfall. Current rates is the method that Missouri set forth. It's the method that Copeland, this court has set forth in Copeland. It is specifically the method that this court has used for three decades awarding current rates. This is not a new way of compensating for delay. It's indeed the only way that this jurisdiction has come.
The 2 minutes. Do my colleagues have further questions? No. If not, then the case is submitted.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Call the next case.